is a deep pleasure to be with you again this morning. It's been some months. I think it was Gretchen's installation when last I was able to join you. And it's always a pleasure to see your beautiful faces. I was really tickled when Ryan was willing to do his rhythm hymn this morning, because that's one of the things that he introduced at the Fort Collins Mountain Desert District annual meeting. And for me, I've described it a number of times, but for those who've never experienced it, it doesn't sound as good as it feels. So I've kind of stopped doing that. But it is one of my internal metaphors, since I don't talk to people about it anymore, for kind of what it is we're trying to do here. We're going to be clapping and snapping and shushing and booming and all that at our different pace and in our different times. But when we seek to bring that together, what we get is beauty. I fear they heard cacophony, so that's why I quit. But there is a beauty in the way we bring together our own thing, I'll say, come from David Bumbaugh's reading, into community, willing to shape our own thing in service to a greater whole. And that is kind of what Unitarian Universalist congregations are trying to do, trying to respect your individuality, walk with your individual journey, and create the beloved community, the both and of that. So today I'm here to speak to you about congregations entering the search process for a new senior minister. I was invited to do nothing less than untangle the Gordian knot of Unitarian Universalist ministry and minister. Did I articulate clearly? Okay. Who does what, for whom, with whom, by what authority, and to what end? Happily, it is possible, with a little reflection, to understand these important distinctions and to have them in mind clearly as you elect your search committee, who will work on behalf of the whole diligently for about the next year, a little over a year. Our title this morning is from the Reverend Bob Kimball, who has also been a professor at one of our seminaries, Star King School for the Ministry. And he understood ministry as a vocation dedicated to increasing the odds on love and life. Increasing the odds on love and life. I like that understanding. It is an excellent summary of my daily to-do list as a Unitarian Universalist minister. And I imagine most of you actively, daily, seek to increase the odds on love and life. Ministry is the work of a religious community as it seeks through faith and love to transform its members' lives and the world around it. Martin Luther King Jr. understood the purpose of the church to be building the beloved community by healing the consequences of lovelessness and injustice in the hearts and minds of its members, so that they might heal the world. That's pretty important work. It is us and beyond us. And there can be no doubt that the world needs deep healing and transformation. In our religious tradition, each congregation owns its ministry, which is often described in its mission. And while many congregational missions, you'll just have to believe me on this, are similar. Each is free to identify the manner in which it will worship, offer care, build justice, educate, and encourage. Back in the day, like the 1950s day, James Luther Adams, one of our preeminent theologians, described our religion as a religious way as the priesthood and prophethood of all believers. All are potentially ministers, increasing the odds on love. And despite this radical empowerment of the laity in our tradition, Often, congregations seek professional religious leaders able to guide, equip, and sustain them in fulfilling their mission. We would confuse ourselves less, actually, if we used the older language of clergy or pastor rather than minister. In our tradition, an ordained religious leader is in covenantal relationship with the congregation, promising to honor individual journeys, speak truth as they understand it, knowing that will change, support the ministries you identify, speak to you prophetically, relate to you authentically, and serve as each is uniquely able. Like each of you, every clergy person has different gifts, different strengths and weaknesses, distinct particularities. Sometimes these will be admirable, and sometimes they will be annoying, just like everywhere else in your life. Sometimes ordained Unitarian Universalist leaders need constructive feedback. Sometimes we need to be forgiven. Often we need to be loved and understood just like everyone else. It was Emerson who has given the liberal religious world the classic description of a good minister, one who deals out to the people a life passed through the fire of thought. And that is what we attempt to do, interpret the myriad vicissitudes of life through our highest values, clarify in order to re-understand the significant events in your life, in our life together, encourage or embolden the courage for deep living. Sometimes we succeed. Sometimes we come very close. And sometimes we fail, just like everyone else. It was Michael Jenkins, professor of pastoral theology at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary, who echoes Emerson but says, "The ordained clergy are like docents in the house of wonder." The house of wonder. I love that image of the human experience. For me, it captures the great gift that is our most unlikely existence on this planet, in this universe that we inhabit, such a tiny speck. Clergy have received training to help guide, comfort, challenge, encourage, and equip you to inhabit this house of wonder with enthusiasm and gratitude. Preparation for our ministry is rigorous, more rigorous than many traditions in the United States. It requires generally four full-time years or the equivalent thereof. We expect all ordained ministers to have an undergraduate degree, a three-year graduate degree resulting in a Master's of Divinity, and this is where we have classes in Christian Scripture, Hebrew Bible, pastoral care, social change, psychology of religion, worship, preaching, ethics, faith formation, justice making. It's a rigorous and wonderful education. We then have career assessment to explore suitability for the Unitarian Universalist ministry, at least 1 9-month parish internship, 10 weeks of full-time clinical pastoral education in a hospital or other medical setting, an interview with the regional subcommittee on candidacy, who can move you forward quickly or set you back just a little, and then ultimately an interview with the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, which is the body that grants credentials for our Unitarian Universalist ministry. I hope you see that we take the qualification and preparation for Unitarian Universalist ordination very seriously. For each of us is privileged to companion you in the brightest of life celebrations and the most desperate, tragic, and heartbreaking of losses. Through this, we hope to help you understand and make meaning of whatever it is you are experiencing. In her Berry Street lecture in 2008, The Reverend Christine Robinson, who is a Mountain Desert District senior minister in our Albuquerque church, wrote, "At the very heart of a professional religious leader's calling is this long, joyful, painful sacrifice of love." In that sentence, I think she is able to capture the tenderness and the terror of saying yes to the ordained ministry. I have been, to the great humor of my friends, quoted in print with a book that has an ISN number, which I feel like means it won't go away soon, as saying that saying yes to the Unitarian Universalist ministry is rather like throwing up. You wouldn't do it if you could figure out anything else to do. That was said really confidentially. I sometimes make errors about trying to explain a rhythm hymn, but I would never have said that from a pulpit until it was printed in a book with an ISN number. This yes is a big deal, and we do not take it lightly, and we do not allow anyone else to take it lightly. That's part of what the process is all about. And I want you to hear that, because all of the people your search committee interviews and engages with and comes to know in order to sort through who will be the best partner for you, all will have had that preparation. All will be people you can come to trust and love. Christine Robinson, though, in talking about her long, joyful, painful sacrifice of love, captures this tenderness and the terror of the yes and acknowledges that we too, we, the ordained clergy of your tradition, are also scared of the sacred. It just, why would we not be? We are talking about the greatest mysteries of life. And so we'll sometimes be in it and really good, and we will sometimes be falling into what she names as the three most profound risks of ordained ministry: to become trapped in ego gratification of accomplishment and position, the inevitable cycle of spiritual dryness, which even the saints talk about, and eccentricity, which I was intrigued by her understanding of this. She understands as losing our center, becoming out of balance, risking fraudulence in this most precious of enterprises. These are very real challenges for clergy. I think in your own profession you would realize they are challenges for human beings. But in our profession, we must be constantly self-aware, indeed vigilant in addressing these struggles as they arise. Collegial relationships are profoundly important in helping us recognize when we are sliding into any one of these problems. And part of our professional ethic is to address one another in love when we witness problematic behavior, a loss of hope, a general level of depression, or a lack of zeal for the work. We counsel one another, even admonish those we love in order to help them find health and balance again. The long, joyful, painful sacrifice of love takes a toll, and we must be in this together in order to have long, vibrant ministries. Now, when talking about ministers, others have taken a considerably more humorous approach. Listen to this description of the perfect minister. He, still there, works from 8 a.m. until midnight, socializing with the congregation, and he is the custodian. He makes $60 a week and gives $50 to the needy and the poor, while wearing fashionable clothes and driving an efficient alternative hybrid car. He is wonderfully gentle, startlingly handsome, endlessly patient, and loves to work with teenagers in between spending significant time with elders. He makes 15 hospital and home visits a day and is always in the office if you call. He can start any hymn on key, notes all the words to all the hymns in both our hymnals. He's 32 years old with 40 years of experience. His spouse works full-time for the church just for the pleasure of serving, and blessedly his children are raising themselves quite well. This isn't going away, though. I realized this when yesterday I received a cartoon from a colleague, six-panel cartoon, with a picture in each of the panels, but these are the captions. It says, "Pastor, what the world thinks I do. Society thinks I preach and hold forth. My parents think I officiate at weddings. My friends think I play golf. My congregations think I am constantly studying, reading, reflecting. I should be serving the poor, but here I am vacuuming the sanctuary." There is a lot of stuff projected onto the ordained clergy. There just is. We know that. But it's really helpful if you know it too. Maybe you can't stop the projecting. That's okay. But if you could just know you're doing it, it would be really, really helpful. I'm just saying. To do ministry in a Unitarian Universalist congregation, to fulfill the vision of beloved community, we're talking about a covenantal partnership between ordained clergy and lay ministers and members of the congregation, with shared roles and responsibilities between the congregation and the professional religious leader. Ministry becomes the work of the entire religious community, offering healing and transformation to all who seek it. This congregation presently sustains a myriad of ministries: faith formation and religious education internally, worship and music, pastoral care and counsel, justice making. I've forgotten the name of it, but I know that you work with the homeless, sheltering and feeding programs. And then that general, as Jennifer and Doug said, openness to welcome, to friendship, to belonging in a new community. And this just names a few. Most of these you are actively providing. All of them require your support and assistance. And this is your shared ministry. It's everybody's business, everybody's responsibility, everybody's blessing, everybody's burden sometimes, and everybody's gift to offer and receive. For in our tradition, as a Unitarian Universalist minister, which I am proud to be, proud to serve you in that way, but I am in no way the personification of ministry. I do ministry, and so do you. My professional standing means that all the things I do related to ministry are as good as I can do them. Not better than you do them, as good as I can do them. It means I have studied, and it means that I spend my professional life doing the ministries you identify, while you spend your professional lives doing a myriad of other equally important pursuits. My professional standing means you have a right to expect that I will help you interpret life ethically and theologically, that I will not shy away from the questions of meaning, mystery, memory, or mission. You can expect that I will live among you authentically and faithfully. You have a right to expect from me the highest standards of professional behavior. You may expect that I will love the people, build the beloved community, and guide you in the skillful means of faith and love. I will remain steadfast always to our tough-minded and tender-hearted liberal faith. However, you would be terribly disappointed if you expected that I could read your mind. Always be cheerful, always be available, always understand you. So here's my confession: I am not the perfect minister. If you assumed that I would never make a mistake of judgment or action, never be discouraged, never be angry, confused, or hurt, then you would be quickly dissatisfied. It serves us all better to be clear about our expectations and our gifts. In the Methodist tradition, you may be aware, bishops assign ministers to congregations, and they generally make new assignments about every 7 years. Now, some years ago, over 15, a small United Methodist Church in Vermont had just been assigned their first woman minister. The church members were a little confused about how to begin a new ministry with a woman clergy. The all-male board of deacons had a custom of inviting each new minister to go fishing with them one Saturday in order to get acquainted in a more casual and inviting environment. They were a little uncomfortable about inviting this woman clergy to go fishing with them, but they felt they shouldn't treat her significantly differently than they had previous ministers. So they invited her, and she accepted. And everyone met at the lake on Saturday morning at dawn. They rowed their boats out to the middle of the lake, and several men were about to put their lines out when the minister said, with some embarrassment, that she had left her tackle box in the trunk of her car. Excusing herself, she stepped out onto the water's surface and began walking back. But as soon as she was out of earshot, one of the deacons looked at the others and said, "Isn't that just like a woman to forget something?" For better or worse, my friends, we see what we are looking for in others. And we often fail to see important truths in unexpected places. I hope you would almost accept this as a spiritual discipline, but I hope you are looking for the best in one another and in all of your ministers and all of your staff. You may glimpse greatness, even divinity, in people you have known for years, or those you meet today. Ministry is a quality of relationship, not dependent on a special person or a place. Ministry is the love that calls forth hidden possibilities. It is the invitation to deeper, more constant relationship with one another, the world, and this divine mystery that is our lives. Mystery will uphold the dignity of each while building the beloved community for all. Ministry is happening every time we increase the odds on love and life. May it be so for you today and in the days to come. Amen.